Greetings,
Mr. and Mrs. Middle America and all the ships at sea. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM. And to the hostile invading alien armies hovering silently behind their cloaking devices just outside of Earth's atmosphere, eat the Canadians first. They're much healthier, and new science proves that. You might be surprised to know, I was, that actually Canadians and Mexicans have a longer lifespan than those of us in the United States part of Northern America. It's kind of shocking, actually. And the reason why was even sadder, I thought. But I'll get to that coming up. I'm going to do some news stories and a little whip around the website in just a minute to get things started. And then I'm going to go early to the phones. Last night we had a caller on Open Lines asking me about my favorite, like my top five shows that I did during the decade, the past decade on Coast to Coast. And it was a very generous question. And I was trying to think about it last night, actually. And I think really I can't answer that question very adequately. I was only on for the first couple of years of the decade. And then I took all that time off because the tinnitus had become overwhelming. I left radio full time because wearing the headphones, along with having a debilitating headache, had become problematic. And so I got the PhD and I started teaching. And I was just became a listener, very much enjoying listening to Coast to Coast. But I didn't listen enough to make notes about other people's shows for that matter. And I couldn't remember any of my own. And then even just coming back, it's too recent, I think, for the last whatever it's been now, a year and a half or so, to say that I've done anything that's memorable. But I do want to know what you all think were the top shows for Coast to Coast in 2010 and all the way up to today, right? Because we'll start the decade after it turns 2010, take it all the way up to the end of 2019. So what are your favorite shows, regardless who the host was, during that period? I'm throwing that question out early. I'll get to some of the answers coming up in just a minute. We'll give you the numbers at the bottom of the hour if you need it, but I know so many of you don't, that we'll have some answers before we get to the bottom of the hour anyway. So When God Had a Wife, though, will be our main show coming up next hour. Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince are back. If I had to name somebody who is in the top five of my all-time favorite guests, they would be in there. Would they be two? I'd have to count as like half of one because I don't want to use up all five, you know, by naming two. But I love them. They were great. They've done wonderful work, a ton of research. And this is no different. When God Had a Wife, the fall and rise of the sacred feminine in the Judeo-Christian tradition speaks to something which almost anybody in seminary already knows, but a lot of the general public has either heard whispers of or gotten kind of, I think, weird glimpses of as a result of the whole Da Vinci Code thing. This is a much more accurate way of looking at the history of God's wife. And we'll get to that coming up next hour when they join us. But first, some great news stories for the night and a dire weather prediction next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Again, we're going to go to the phones a little bit early this hour for Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. I threw out a topic about which one was your favorite show for all of the hosts for 2019. For all of the past decade. You can use that as a guide, or you can go any direction you want. It is Open Lines on Coast to Coast. But before we get there, I had to take you to the website at coasttocoastam.com, where there is a story that's been bugging me all day. We put it up. It's in the carousel. It's the first story in the carousel. I'm going to read you Tim Banal's headline, which if Tim is listening, I disagree with this. But here's his headline. It's a video. It says, watch, fishermen break up bizarre battle between bald eagle and octopus. Now, if you've seen the video, you already know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, it's waiting for you at the top of the fold at coasttocoastam.com. And it's a video that some fishermen took off the Canadian coast in like an inlet area of a rather large engorged octopus that was wrapping its arms around a bald eagle that had hit the water. And the octopus was slowly drowning the bald eagle and was going to attempt to eat it. The fisherman, like, far be it for me to know whether an octopus can eat an eagle, but I'm willing to guess yes. It may not eat it in one bite, but the fishermen get involved and start sticking a pole in between the tentacles of the octopus and the bald eagle to free the bald eagle. Now, let me just say, there's a part of my Americanness, that relates to my tribe, and I think, oh, good thing they freed the bald eagle. But the other part I'm thinking is, isn't this just nature? I mean, this is just, it may not be the usual you see, and then that part of the headline is true. It may seem like a little bizarre, but it wasn't a battle between a bald eagle and an octopus. These fishermen were coming between an octopus and a sub sandwich, right? I mean, the fishermen were jumping in there and stopping the octopus from eating what it felt like was just going to be like a nice repast. So they get involved. Eventually, the eagle gets away, and the octopus goes to the depths of the water hungry. I don't think of this as a victory. I would just have let that go. I mean, in nature, but they didn't, and the story is there. For that matter, this also speaks to this other natural story, which is popping up at coasttocoastam.com. The Tasmanian tiger researcher has bold plan to prove creature is not extinct. And the story here is that a researcher is going to go out into the wilds of Tasmania and try to find an existing mating pair or so of the elusive Tasmanian tiger, which is really more of a, it's more of like a wolf or a coyote, but it has stripes like a tiger on its hind end. So go look at the story. He plans on being gone for 2 years. I think the over under is like 4 months, but God bless him. If he can stay out for 2 years to try to find something which other people think of as extinct, all right. In the meantime, scientists are still trying to revive the Tasmanian tiger by pulling up the DNA and using it, mating it with a similar species, and at least coming up with what would be a similar creature today. We'll keep you posted on both of those stories. By the way, the big sports story for today was that Joe Burrow of LSU won the Heisman Trophy, and in grand style. I think I heard the highest vote, most largest landslide victory in the history of the Heisman Trophy or something like that. Everybody knew he was going to win. It's not a big surprise. But his speech was nice and very gracious to both the offensive line and his coaches. And we say congratulations to him. It'll be interesting to see whether LSU can take it all the way through to the national championship or whether, as some people say, this might be some kind of a Heisman jinx. Also online, if you go to see in the news today, these are more recent stories at coasttocoastam.com. Ripley's power loader from Aliens is now real. So if you understand what
So
I'm
this
talking
is going
about,
to
go ahead.
grab onto this thing, get some of that form and force closure we talked about. I'm just going to line up those rails and slide it in. That
So
is one person doing a
this
three-person
is a
task, and
guy,
that's what
thank
the
you so much,
exoskeleton is
Michael.
for.
That's a guy in an exosuit, like in the movie Aliens, where he can power lift things, well, kind of like how an ant can, lift so much more than their body weight with this exosuit, which kind of reminds me too of the movie Avatar. You can see the video of how much people wearing this will be able to pull off, both on the factory floor or with a military application as well. Of course, though, when I look at that story, I think three words, which is future Heisman winner, but it may be a while before they're wearing those out on the football fields. Okay, then I want to go back to something I mentioned at the very beginning of the show before we go to start taking your calls. And that's this. Humans have a natural lifespan, and scientists have been able to determine how long we are actually supposed to live according to our DNA blueprint. Now, I won't tell you the number yet, but think about this. They've been able to determine this by a pretty simple consistency of sampling the average lifespans of other species in regard to certain genetic codes within each one of those species. So we have that same code. According to like a whale, A whale's DNA, it's supposed to be 268 years. A tortoise is like 120 years. But the average lifespan of humans, according to the DNA coding that we carry, is only 38 years. Not a big surprise for any student of history who knows that people tended to die much younger for thousands of years. For that matter, why it was that one was considered a man or a woman at 13. You were considered an adult. You were expected to be married. Because think about it, that is getting perilously close to the, you know, halfway mark of your life. So, yeah, it kind of makes sense. But now you look at how much do we live now? Around North America, the average is 80 years. So we're already living over twice as long as human beings than we are genetically coded to, which for some reason makes me reflect on what people often say about us playing God. I mean, if this is how we were designed, we're well into quadruple overtime, right? But that's not true of people in the United States. Canadians are about 80 years. And Mexicans are about 80 years, but we're like little less than 78 and going down. And the reason scientists think that our life expectancy on average is changing is not because of something physical. It's not because of all the French fries, not because of, you know, we don't get enough on a Peloton. It's because of mental well-being. That feelings of despair and depression is what may be holding down our natural lifespan. Well, sorry, our unnatural lifespans in the United States. Kind of a scary thought, but it does speak to a lot of callers we had last night when we were doing open lines on Coast to Coast. And one of those questions that came up was about the best shows of the past 10 years. I've got Brian, east of the Rockies in Columbus on Coast to Coast AM. Brian?
Hey, Ian, how you doing?
Doing all right. So,
by the way, before I start, no raking.
Yeah, that's also a reference to last night where Annie was saying raking should be illegal. We shouldn't do raking.
Composting and no touchscreens.
I know. Well, okay, stop for a second because you brought up a good point. So, I'm not trying to pinpoint Annie, but everybody knows it because she was very public with this. So, a caller said that it was against the law to have touch screens, and so none of us should be allowed to have smartphones with touch screens. And I looked into this, and the only thing I could find was that they had written a provision against touch screens in public, taxpayer-funded buildings, because that discriminated against the blind who were going into that building. Now, that makes perfect sense, right?
This plays right into me. I'm a retired teacher of the blind, and I'm also blind.
Okay. Well, then tell me. So, like, I heard that, and I thought, well, but if it could not be a law that they passed in 1996 that said nobody can have touch screens.
94-142 is what she's talking about. And, you know, equal access to the blind, but it doesn't prohibit from... It drives me crazy.
Well, no, but that's important. So it doesn't prohibit people from having a touchscreen, but it said government buildings shouldn't be limited to that because then somebody who is blind wouldn't have equal access to the direction. See,
I
that
don't
doesn't
have a touchscreen microwave. I have knobs, okay?
Right.
And it is difficult.
Right.
And, you know, it is difficult for us blind people. You know, you have to learn to adapt, and, you know, it is difficult, but... No, she's way off on that.
How long have you been blind?
Oh, God. I first lost my sight around 32, and I finally found the right doctor, and I got my sight back again for another 10 to 12 years, and now it's the second time.
Oh, really? Same reason you lost it the first time or a different reason?
I have retinitis pigmentosa, which is a degenerative disease of the retina. And then I had cataracts, and I could not find a physician that would take a chance. So they thought the retinitis had won, okay? But I said, no, when the cataracts got worse, I had sight underneath there. I finally found somebody who would believe me, and I got 12 to 13, 14 more years of sight.
Wow.
I was thrilled.
I mean, Can I, and without getting too personal, is that, was that like perfect sight where you could drive or just you could read?
Read, and I, I, during that blind period, there was all these people I met, including my partner. I'd never seen them, and I had my dog.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to see all these things.
Oh, how exciting.
It was, it was exciting. Wow. Now, I'm one of those, I was blessed to have that.
Well, that, you got overtime there, too, so that's great. Anytime any of us can get that.
Those good years.
That's
always
a good thing.
I just really enjoy you when you're the host.
Oh, thank you. I have a great time. Yeah. So, okay, so looking back for the last decade, what's your what shows?
You were the host, and I'm going to have you help me with this, but it was the most fascinating show to me in that it was a show on the desert things.
Yeah.
Where the campsites.
Yes.
You remember this.
So we've done a couple of shows on the desert. This is after I came back, right? Because I became very fascinated with the.
I think so, but there was one campsite where there was the tent and there were chairs around what was a campfire, and yet it was real mysterious stuff. And I just found that fascinating.
Well, good. Well, I love those kind of shows too. And we did a lot about people that were missing in the desert and the desert mysteries. Shows from a couple of different perspectives. We had a couple of different authors, but yes, I love those too. And I thought the particularly the ones about people that have walked into the desert and never to be seen again or heard from again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and that was one of them. But they found, so later on they found a campsite with where they had been the night before, and for absolutely inexplicable reasons, nobody's there anymore, and nobody knows why.
Isn't
there was nothing left. Yeah,
fascinating.
Me too. I do. I didn't know it. I didn't appreciate it until I had moved to the Southwest. Now I'm in Kansas, and I'm expected to get 4 inches of snow in the next 36 hours. So I probably won't leave my house here because I live on top of a hill. So I'll probably be stuck in here for a while yet. But I'll take that too. That it's every place has its unique weather. So thank you so much. Thank you and have a great night. Well, let me get to Wildcard Line. Pam is in Denver on Coast to Coast AM. Favorite show from the past 10 years as we wrap up this decade, Pam?
Mine was I loved the Innovations on the Verge with, I think it was Joel Baker or Barker.
Tell me about that.
Well, he was the one that was, talking about how, FedEx and the waiting wait people were putting inventions together to, lift up and wait, to tell the weight of the cargo and stuff so they could load the trucks. But the most fascinating one was the Bucky paper. And every once in a while, I think about, when
Bucky
is that
paper.
Bucky paper coming out?
What is Bucky paper? I kind of have a memory
of
this
Bucky
paper.
I don't know. It was kind of like it sounded like some sort of enzyme, and it was supposed to be stronger than steel.
Oh, that's right. I think I did. Either I heard that show or I did that show, which is even scarier.
It was really
That sounds right. When you said the Bucky paper, I'm like, I remember that. Okay, that's really weird. Okay, well, I got to look into that. I'll try to get an update for you on that.
Because I'm an insider, so I shared that with my brothers and a couple other people, and they loved it. You know, it was just so inspiring at that time, to hear about some new inventions coming.
Well, Joel
Earth.
Was a neighbor of mine. And so I kind of knew him a little bit because we sort of traveled a little bit of the same circles. He had this beautiful house overlooking the bluff in St. Paul, and it was gorgeous, and he was a really nice guy, and he was the guy tracking these inventions, these future things. I'll have to get an update from him, and I'll see what I can find out. But thank you. It's funny. Until you said Bucky paper, I didn't track with that was me, but that's pretty funny. So west of the Rockies we'll go. Steve is also in Colorado on Coast to Coast. Steve?
Yes. Now I'm thinking Bucky Balls. Is that the same thing you're talking about?
So there was this new nanocarbon thing. That's what the Bucky paper was. Is that the same thing you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about Buckminster Fuller.
Yeah, he was great. I met him.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I met him when I was a kid.
Nope, that's what I mean. I can't believe you are so connected. That
I did.
Cool.
He came before he died. He came and he spoke to my school, and I was chosen to be his tour guide.
My
I was like 9 years old. I know, this is the coolest thing. He was very old, like, but it was.
Let me guess. You passed 27, right?
Yeah. Yeah, a long time ago. Thank you. That's very interesting. Right. Let me go to the wild card line where Annie is hanging on. I'll try and get her in before the bottom of the hour. Annie?
Hello, Ian. I'd like to clarify what I said last night since nobody heard but half what I said.
Okay.
And I will tell you that Jim Marr's last show was my favorite ever.
He was great.
What I said was that the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which does not mention touch screens per se, says that any phone's illegal if it's not accessible to the blind and handicapped. So that would include any phone that doesn't have a tactile dial pad, which does
okay.
not require you to click on anything. You just pick up the phone and start dialing.
All right. Well, I'm left still wondering whether that's still valid, but I appreciate the fact that you offered that more of a clarification, and we'll leave it there. We'll give you the number so everybody can join the conversation coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. When God Had a Wife, coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM. But the phones are loading up. I love that. And we'll find out more about your favorite shows of all of the hosts of the last 10 years as this decade comes to an end. And I will go through the excruciatingly terrifying experience of having people remember shows that I hosted that I don't remember right away until about halfway through the call. Like, it has already happened twice. So we'll do that coming up next on Coast to Coast, but it's open lines too, so you can take us anywhere you want to go next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, let's start with Sean, who's in Southern Ontario on Coast to Coast AM with his favorite show of the last 10 years as we wrap up this decade, Charlie. How you doing, Sean?
Not too bad. How's it going?
You, what was How your you favorite?
Great. I'm great, thanks. I enjoyed the
You broke up a little bit. Did I hear you say remote viewing?
Yeah, the remote viewing.
Oh, cool. And who did that, Richard?
I think so. I can't really recall. I know it wasn't George, so I was thinking it was either you or Richard, but it must have been Richard.
Probably was. And you know what? That's a really, it's a fascinating subject. I haven't had a show on that in ages.
I went home and tried it out with the family right after.
Any luck?
We were somewhat close, and I was somewhat close on the radio that night. It's entertaining to be interactive with the audience. Right?
Yeah, you know, I remember once reading that all it takes is one time, you know, if you put something really obscure in a file cabinet 1,000 miles away and 100 people try to remote view what you put in the file cabinet 1,000 miles away and one person gets it right, that's a success.
Yeah. You know,
so I don't.
We tried it both ways. I tried to put the image out in my head so they could pick it up, and we didn't have luck that way. But then I had all three of them focus on an image. It was a candy dish, and I ended up getting pretty close to it with all three of them putting that image out. But it wasn't exact, but it was close. It's fun to try it out.
Are you getting a lot of snow these days?
We're not there yet. I mean, it's thick, so I'm pretty thankful. But
okay,
we could have talked before Christmas.
We're getting more in the lower 48.
Yeah, I've been reading about it. I'm thankful.
Yeah, well, we know it's coming to you eventually, but thank you, Sean. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I had to run to the Hy-Vee for provisions because I have a feeling I'm going to be snowed in. It's not that the snow's that deep. It's just it's treacherous to try and get down the hill. Mike is in Connecticut, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. Oh, Mike's gone. How about Wayne in Tacoma? Wayne, west of the Rockies, what was your favorite show of the last 10 years, this last decade?
Good evening. Good evening, Sir Ian, and thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I actually got about five favorites.
Cool.
Top of all time was Father Malachi Martin. That's more than 10 years now, but he was fantastic. Jesuit general, had all the insight stuff on the Roman Catholic Church, wrote scathing books about the Catholic Church, and still had instant access to the Pope. So, I mean, he was amazing. I guess kind of along that line in prophecy in that, Hugh Ross and I'm thinking of the name of the gentleman that's on TBN, the number one guy in prophecy on TBN out of Texas. I'm trying to think of his name right now. That'll come up in a minute. But as far as scientific stuff goes on that, the Rocket Man, David Adair.
Tell me about
the David Adair story.
No, no.
Oh, amazing story. I mean, this guy invented a nuclear combustion, magnetically contained engine, and he was 17 years old, and he shot it off for the Air Force into Area 51.
Okay, that's very cool. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, that was an amazing, amazing story. And he started being on about 30 years ago almost.
Oh, really?
And he's only been on, I think, once in the last 10 years.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Yeah, you know that we're pronouncing it wrong, you know, on Malachi Martin.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's Malachi.
Malachi, you're right. Yeah, I
know. No, because, no, the prophet is named Malachi, but he's named after the Irish saint who they pronounced Malachi. And yeah. I learned that from a show about Malachi Martin that we did after he had passed by one of his biographers who had had access to some secret tapes of his, and it was a really interesting show about Malachi Martin. But it's always stuck with me that in Ireland they say Malachi, and he just kind of got used to the fact that everybody called him Malachi. He stopped correcting people.
I have a question for you, Ewan.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're a theological guy, and I'm into soteriology.
Okay.
So what's the most important thing in soteriology to you? I mean, what stands out to you as the essential?
Well, I mean, you'd have to tell me when you say soteriology, are you meaning in the religious application? Oh, sorry, that's my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is listening. That ding you heard, I forgot to turn that off. That's my mother-in-law. Hi, Mary. Glad you're up. If you're talking about salvation, are you talking about salvation in a Christian context? What's the most important part?
Exactly right.
Yeah, but what's the most important part? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, many people have different aspects of when they bring up salvation and what's essential. But I mean, it's pretty fundamental, I think. You know, it's by faith alone, through grace alone, and Christ alone. You know, many people like to add on things to that, you know, to do, you know.
That's the difference of religion.
Taken away.
Right. So, that's how you see it, and that's good. But, I wasn't raised Catholic, so I may have a different perspective on that, but I appreciate yours, and we'll let me move on. I've got a couple of the people who are hanging on coast to coast. We've got Omaha with Todd on a first-time caller line. Todd?
Ian, good evening.
Evening.
I remember a very good show you had where you interviewed a man that claimed to be the son of Charles Lindbergh.
Yes.
He's the Lindbergh baby.
Yes, I had him on twice. He was great.
I don't remember when the year was, but it was a fascinating show, and I kind of believe him.
He made such an effective case, especially when he told the story of how he met Lindbergh and then the mobster that took him away and all. Oh, it was such a good story. I totally believed him. In fact, it sort of started a tradition. After that interview, we did a few more books like that with people who had unusual alternative versions of biographies of famous people in the United States. And that was our first, I think. But then we did a book on Patton and whether Patton had been murdered and all of those things that kind of come up after that first interview about the Lindbergh guy. I thought he was great. Yeah, I wish I could remember his name, but he was very effective. And he had interesting documentation. It wasn't perfect, but it was very unusual for a guy to grow up having what he had in his possession if he wasn't the Lindbergh baby. I remember what it was. The reason why they gave him up was because he was imperfect. And that was something which apparently Lindbergh was very fixated on, was having a perfect child, and that he had had some sort of birth defect, which he had outgrown or they had corrected with surgery or something. But, yeah, remember that well. Thank you, Todd. Appreciate that. Got a couple of people. Barry is in South Carolina on Coast to Coast AM. Barry?
What do you say, Ian? And I tell you what, buddy, you better watch your step with that Annie from Alabama. She'll come to Kansas and take the breakaway.
She will not. She doesn't hate me. It's just I can't find any verification anywhere that there's a law that says there can be no touchscreen phones.
Oh, it's interpretation, Ian. And the thing is, Annie, she's so funny because I love composting. It's a wonderful thing. But if you want to rake your yard and get all those leaves off the grass, there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, I think it's always fun for me whenever Annie calls. She has another law she'd like to propose, something else that should be illegal. And it's always something that she's not doing anyway, so I think that's easier. It's much harder when we come up with laws of things that we enjoy doing and say we should be prevented from doing this because I like raking. So, all right, so did you have a favorite show from the last 10 years, though, Barry?
Yes, I do, and I was telling Donna, my favorite all-time show of yours was Last Night.
By Monty Python?
Yeah, that, and of course, Open Lines with
Open
me
Lines.
And Danny and all the crowd. Wayne was on there from Tacoma. Hey, Wayne, how you doing, buddy? Anyway, Cornelius and all my friends and fans out there in Coast to Coast land, I just want to say hello to them. And thank you, Ian, for taking my call, and I'll see you around, buddy.
All right, Barry. Jordan is in Kansas on Coast to Coast AM. Jordan?
Hi, Ian. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, so the past decade, your favorite show on Coast to Coast as we wrap up this decade.
Okay, I'm not sure if it was in 18 or 19, but it was your interview you did with Diane Lake from the Manson family.
Yeah, that was earlier this year. Yeah, that was 19. Yeah, earlier in 19 when we talked to her just before the movie came out, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah, that was really, I thank you for saying that. It was a really interesting, and she was terrific. And the way she told her story, even the shocking details that she relayed on the air, which I wasn't expecting her to say, I haven't forgotten. I still have the book by my bedstand. I was actually looking at it the other day. It was great. It was really good. Thank you for saying that. Did you ever go see the movie?
No, I never did. No, I didn't. But I just thought it was amazing how she ended up
and how she ended up out of it too.
Childhood and everything like that she went through.
Well, you should, if you ever do see the movie, just remember she's pictured in it, and it's a strange moment to see somebody you've already seen, interviewed, or talked to, and suddenly they pop up as a character in a movie like that, because as she said, that was pretty close to what actually happened. And that in itself is kind of freaky. East of the Rockies, Steve is in South Dakota on Coast to Coast. And Steve, past 10 years, your favorite Coast to Coast show?
Okay, you were the host.
Go ahead.
And I'm not going to tell you the guest. I'm going to say the first two words of his book.
Okay.
Last Train.
Well, it could only be Last Train from Hiroshima by Charles Pellegrino.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's an easy one because he's my buddy. I talk to him like twice a week.
That was an absolutely brutal book.
It's
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to read that book.
Yeah, and it's still out in the reissue, and it is a terrific book. I have it on Kindle. And I was reading it I needed something to read. I was waiting for a plane, and I was just going through some of my Kindle books, and I went back and reread some
sections. Now, what was the controversy about it?
Right. No, you're exactly right. So this is part of why he and I are staying in conversation. He was lambasted for two things, both of which were unfair. The first was that he had gotten hoaxed in the very original edition of the book by a guy who had boxes of documentation that showed that he had been on the Enola, no, he had been in the chase plane for the Enola Gay, and that he was a witness, he was a first-hand witness, and he had evidence that one of the bombs was a dud, and so Charlie went with that. And that was in the first edition of the book. And then it was exposed afterward that guy had hoaxed Charlie. And he had been claiming his whole life that that was him. And he convinced everybody at the local Veterans Hall, and he convinced his wife, and everybody believed him. And then it was proven that that was a hoax. And then a lot of people came after Charlie after that, and they claimed that he didn't have his PhD.
That was just terrible. He was a brilliant author.
And he did have his PhD, and they did take it away from him in Australia. I proved that for him because I thought it was really unfair, and I actually wrote about it, and he was 100% right. He did get hoaxed, and he felt bad about it. But the second editions of the books and all the subsequent editions of the books have the hoax taken out. It's still a great book, as you point out. Well, good. I'm sorry. It looks like I lost you, but thank you so much for saying that because I love him and he's a good guy. David is in Montreal on Coast to Coast for his favorite show from the last 10 years on Coast to Coast. David?
Hi, Ian. How are you doing? This is one of your tasty Canadians.
Yeah, I love that. Go ahead. But what's your favorite?
You know, it's funny. I think a lot of people like myself, invariably we tune in to hear a lot of the UFO shows over the years, you know, with Art Bell and so on. And I do remember about 2-3 years ago, if it's that long, George Knapp put together a show that was not even close to UFO related. It was about The Irishman, about the movie that's out now.
Yeah, really?
The show about the mobster, about the guy who was the hitman. Now they say he killed Jimmy Hoffa.
Right.
The show was probably the best show I've ever heard.
It was
so captivating, how he described the hitman and how Buffalino, you know, the mobster boss, hired him.
Right.
It was just a great, great show.
Well, nobody knows more about that type of mob activity than George Knapp. And the work he did in Vegas, of course, working and investigating the mob and some of their other previous hits on well-known people. He was the right guy for that show. I wish I had heard it. It sounds like a real good one. West of the Rockies, Brian is in Washington, Utah on Coast to Coast. Brian?
Hi, Ian. How you doing?
Good. Your favorite show of the past 10 years, unless as we wrap up this decade.
Well, this is a show that I'm pretty sure you were the host of.
Uh-oh.
And if you were, you probably don't want to think about it. You interviewed an author of some book about Edgar Allan Poe. Do you remember that show?
I don't. But tell me more about what you remember.
The guy didn't know a thing. and you... You had all this great background information on Edgar Allan Poe, biographical stuff, and you'd relate something to this author, and he'd go, oh, I didn't know that. And then you'd tell another story and background about Poe, and he would say, oh, I didn't know that. Is that true? And that's the way the whole program went, and I was just laughing myself. So I started crying.
Okay, I have to look that up and find out, because I have completely blocked that out of my mind.
But he didn't know a thing, and you were giving all these great details, and I don't know if he was a music author or what.
That is terrible.
It was hilarious, because he didn't know Jack.
It sounded like I got hoaxed. You know, it's funny, is that that's happened more than a few times, where... I read somebody's, what usually happens is I read somebody's book and then I interview them and they don't remember what's in their book. And so I'll ask them a question from a dog-eared page and I'll like pull the question right up from the page and they go, no, I don't have an idea what you're talking about. And I'm like, well, they're right here on page 67. No, I didn't write that. That's like, it's in your book.
That could be, there was absolutely no discussion or conversation to it because this guy didn't know a thing. And you were just stammering and not knowing what to do.
Because you don't want to embarrass somebody, right? I hope that, you know, I kind of hope that happened to me so that it didn't happen to somebody else on Coast to Coast. I'm willing to, I hope that was me and I've just forgotten about it because I hate for somebody else to have to go through that. But it wouldn't be the first time. And that's so funny. And a very good friend of mine recently referred to that as when I have a sock puppet guest. And when I'm talking to the guest and I have to treat them like a sock puppet, I thought that was so funny when they said that to me. And now I'm laughing because of what you said. And I'll be laughing all night, actually, as I look back on that. What a perfect place to stop. I don't know that I could go on anyway. I will offer an a correction, but it's not really. So the author we had on about being the Charles Lindbergh baby called himself Charles Lindbergh Jr., but that wasn't his birth name. He had had another name, and it was a really interesting story. He'd been adopted by a grocer owned a small store, a merchant of some sort, and he had originally had that name, but later on in life started going by Charles Lindbergh Jr. But I stand corrected on that. By the time he published the book, that's what he was calling himself. When God had a wife, the fall and rise of the sacred feminine in the Judeo-Christian tradition. Coming up next, Clive and Lynn back again on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Bunnett.